At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, June 25th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and here again, I am with Luke Guerrero. And of course, the objective today is to help you become a better investor. And Luke, it is a unique time. And, you know, what are you feeling about the market the last few days, especially with the NVIDIA news, which I know we'll get to in a little bit?
Well, I will say that you were on vacation. You were in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And growth and momentum names started to unwind a little bit. And you came back and big tech made a reversal today off of that trend. So maybe you are big tech's good luck charm.
Am I? Maybe I need to go on vacation a little bit more. I do notice that it's weird. Markets do turn regularly when I'm on vacation. And so maybe I'm a bad luck charm, shall we say? But, you know, it also depends on how you're positioned, right?
Depends for whom.
Exactly. So with that said, that is our main focus point. And, you know, this is an interesting time in markets, and we'll get to this. There's a lot of lessons to be learned with what's happened with NVIDIA as of late. But we're going to do our best to unpack a lot of lessons that hopefully you can take back to your own personal situation. We'll talk about the market performance today and run down some show topics. So first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, Luke, it's Justin. This is Nick from Long Island. Just wanted to give a call about stock ticker symbol CLF. I used to own CMC a while ago. I made a little bit of money on it. Looks like CLF kind of has been on the decline. Just wondering if it's a good time to get in. Thanks.
All right. Looking at Cleveland Cliffs, and they produce flat rolled steel and supplier of iron ore pellets in the United States. And Luke, historically, this industry is very cyclical. The earnings are up and down. And right now, the stock is down 37% from its 52-week high, even though last quarter earnings were up a lot year over year, but that's coming off a pretty low base. What are you seeing from a valuation perspective and profit perspective?
Yeah, from a valuation and profit perspective, I can see that revenue started to fall a little bit back in 2022. It peaked out in 2021, but the problem here also is that margins started to slip as well. So it was around 14.6% net margins in 2021, and then now that's pushing down to 1%, and even 0.9% is what it's projected to be this year. Even with that, it's still trading at a forward-looking earnings PD of 21 times. Price to book, though, it's trading at about its asset base. I think there's been a little slip-off in cash flow in the past couple of years, and like I said, that slip-off in profitability as well, and so the stock is suffering with that.
Yeah, I just don't think this is a very good name within this space. And I don't like the up and down nature of its profitability. 2018, they made $3.63. Went to break even in 2020. That's kind of understandable. You had COVID, but only $1.12 in 2019 pre-COVID. Went up big in 2021, and now we're crashing back down to 35 cents expected earnings for this year. So, and those estimates for this year and next year continue to go down. So you're barking up the wrong tree here. Firstly, this industry is not the greatest to invest in. You know, it's better than probably airline stocks, but that's a low bar, right? So I absolutely would not be touching Cleveland Cliffs. I know they're buying back $1.5 billion in shares, and that's all nice. But you know, their earnings picture is headed in the wrong direction, and so is the stock. So I'm passing on Cleveland Cliffs. Okay. Now we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and we have a lot planned, time permitting, and my main focus point concerns this story. NVIDIA stock surges, then stumbles. What's next for investors? NVIDIA stock has been on a roller coaster ride lately, surging to unprecedented heights before experiencing sudden and sharp pullback. This dramatic turn of events has left investors and analysts alike wondering what led to NVIDIA's meteoric rise and what factors are behind the recent stumble and what lies ahead in the future. So that's our main focus point. We have others on the docket as well. One is in regards to, let me pull it up here. There we go. Have it. One is a lot of investors are in cash and they are earning, they feel like they're earning a nice juicy yield right now because of the Fed tightening cycle. But are they misallocating capital? Simple as that. And we'll look at that story. Also, what are the lessons to the wild ride that has been Peloton?
That's a good pun. Continues.
That's a good pun. Yeah, that's a good pun. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a wild ride down, and we'll talk about what that means for the sector in general, what lessons can be learned, like I said, and most importantly, the convertible bond market, how to think about that market as a whole. And then if we have time, I know Luke's favorite topic, which is the indexing craze and the construction of a lot of those indices, including the Russell. So we're going to look at that as well, if we have time. Once again, we also have voice bank questions. One on is on AESI, which is the Atlas Energy Solutions Incorporated, and then a bond, one on a bond fund that we were trying to get to yesterday, wasn't able to get to that. We also have some questions submitted via the comment section over in the on the YouTube channel as well. And of course, we welcome your finance investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going to a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the InvestDoc Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. You've got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, let's take a look at the market today, and it was kind of a flip-flop of yesterday. Yesterday, you had a large cap tech down big, well over 1%, and you had the whole value side of the market up over 1%, and you just flipped it today. Large cap growth up 1.4%, NVIDIA did bounce back up 6.76%, still below yesterday's high. So it's not like it's exceeded yesterday's high. Excuse me. I apologize. It's still below where it closed the day before yesterday. There we go. That's the way to look at it. And let's see. At Carnival Cruise is up 8%. Rivian had a nice deal with, I believe, Volkswagen. So that was up by 8%. Tesla up 2%. I'm surprised Tesla's up 2%, right, considering that Rivian news. But yeah, that was the tenor of the market today, just kind of a flip-flop of yesterday. So not much to really discern between those 2 days. What were you seeing over the past couple of days?
Yeah, I think what you've been seeing is, with the exception of today, a widening out of the breadth a little bit. You saw big tech down. Some of those names that hadn't run up as much as those larger AI names, those larger tech names, are starting to widen that rally. Today, you saw the opposite. You saw the equal weight S&P index underperforming by just about 1%, small caps underperforming 42 basis points, while the S&P 500 large caps was outperforming by had 40 basis point positive performance. And all of that on the heels of, you know, June consumer confidence coming in a little bit better than expected. But then on the same time, you had some retail names. I know Walmart adjusted their Q2 guidance, saying that it's going to be worse than Q1 and certainly more challenging from a comps perspective. You saw some more retail names, Target, for example, saying they're starting to slash some prices. So, you know, from an economic standpoint, I think you see more, a little bit more cracks in the power of the consumer spending. And that's on the back of what we should get as a PCE number on Friday, which certainly will be interesting to see.
Yeah, and rates dropped a bit on that news that Walmart, like you said, downgrading their earnings expectations. And you saw gold that was down a bit after a nice end of last week. And the interesting sector that was up today was actually energy. Big move yesterday as OPEC Plus basically said, we will pump more when market conditions allow, which the market interpreted that as, hey, when prices are a lot higher, then we'll pump more crude. So that helped the market yesterday, and you got follow through again today. So I thought that was of note. But, you know, we're through earnings season, the end of the quarter. We're going to get some end of the quarter window dressing here. And then the 4th of July holiday week, which tends to be a kind of a quiet week, especially when you get 4th of July midweek like we are this year. So interesting market, but most of all, continues to be that loss of momentum of the major tech names, despite the bounce back today. Oftentimes, when you're entering a downtrend, the largest moves higher happen in those downtrends, and then you get some kind of grinding lower. So we'll see if we start that process here with some of those AI names. All right, now let's talk to Will in San Diego. He wants to look at Affirm.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say condolences to Steve's family. I remember when he and your grandfather used to give seminars down here in La Jolla, which I attended some 20 plus years ago. But my stock is Affirm Holdings, and I wanted to know what you thought of it. Is now a good time to get into it or avoid it altogether?
Well, Affirm is one of those growth names that surprisingly, at least to me, surprisingly is starting to, at least expected to turn a profit. It actually hasn't produced a profit yet if you look at the earnings numbers, but this year expected to earn 86 cents, 97 cents next year. But this is that... This is a buy now, pay later platform, if I'm remembering correctly. Right, Luke?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, we did a focus point on buy now, pay laters on Friday and why they're dangerous. So I'll get into that when you're done.
Yeah. Well, I would say the technicals look fairly solid, to be frank. You had a big move higher in the fall into the beginning of the year. And it's been a kind of controlled pullback. We call this a bull flag in technical terms. Mm-hmm. So I like that. But historically, this has not been a profitable name, and I don't really feel like those earnings expectations will come to fruition because you've never seen it before. Oh. So I would not be buying this, despite the chart. Okay. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, I agree as well. For what it's worth, the earnings projections I'm seeing on FactSet actually still has them losing money the next 2 years with net margins negative. I think one of the dangers with some of these buy now, pay later names is that it's a hidden form of credit, something we talked about on Friday, where all these companies are extending these credit lines to people, and it's not within their credit reports. You don't really know what the damage is being done elsewhere. And so there's a lot of risk that some of these people aren't going to be able to pay it back. And certainly as the economy starts to tighten up a little bit and things start to degrade, that could be a concern for some of these loans here as well. But bottom line here, you know, Steve used to say it all the time, don't buy companies that aren't making money, and this company's just not making money.
I agree.
Oh, okay. Well, that says it. Oh, thank you very much.
That definitely says it. Yeah. And that's the lesson here is you could, if you want to be a trader and you want to trade this, it's actually a pretty good chart setup. But when you're a trader and you're just looking for that short-term move, you don't really care about the fundamentals. You just are playing the chart. Now, if you're an investor and you're, you know, want to buy it for a long period of time and own it for a long period of time, then it's really about the fundamentals, the quality of the business, as we talked about in our last webinar. And Affirm just has never been able to turn that quote-unquote growth into real profits. And that's why you need both to line up. And in this case, they don't. So that's where we're at. And that's why we pass on Affirm. Now we're moving into a quick break, but give us a call. We enjoy your recorded questions, but we love your live calls at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, today's main focus point is about NVIDIA's stock surge and recent tumble. And what could be next? And this is the story that has captivated Wall Street over the past, would you say, year, 6 months, 9 months?
As much as 18 months. I mean, this is a name that in the past 5 months, it's run up, what, 70%, 75% in the past 5-6 months?
Yeah.
Going back 10 years, it's had historic returns when they shifted away from being a gaming company into focusing on what GPUs could do. So I think it's been a darling of Wall Street for quite some time, from retail as well. You get a lot of options volume on this name. So I think it's really captured everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it did bottom split adjusted around $10 in the fall of 2022. And now it's at 126 after peaking at 100 and roughly 40. So, you know, this is actually 135. Looks like what it peaked out at. And, you know, this is one of those names that makes you look back at history, right? When a company goes up over 1,000% and becomes the largest, or the highest valued stock in the world, you have to say, what is there a precedent to this? And the reality is there actually is. And many have talked about it, and it's Cisco in 2000. And just like Cisco, during the 2 years leading up to the dot-com peak, NVIDIA is seeing similar gains and moved in similar waves over the past 2 years. And in that era, Cisco was also the most valuable company on Earth. So there's some parallels there now as well. It wasn't just the rise, but it's been the recent peak. And Cisco did peak soon after becoming the most valuable company in the world. But you know, it's all going to be about profits. We've said many times, short term, the market is a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. And it's all about the weight of those profits. And currently, NVIDIA's profit level, 49% net margins and growth, 262% year over year, are likely unsustainable. The five-year average profit margins for NVIDIA is only 25%, so half of what it is today. And we know historically with the chip industry that is very cyclical. It is all about the economy, all about CapEx cycles, and especially in this cycle where it's all about building out the infrastructure for AI. Very similar to with Cisco. Cisco was building out the infrastructure for the internet. And Cisco went on to be a very successful company, very profitable, but never lived up to the growth hype that was built into the stock. And the big question, Luke, is this really just an echo of what Cisco was?
I think in some ways it is. I talked about this last week, I believe, when somebody called in asking about NVIDIA. And essentially my point is that what is currently priced in to the value of this company are some pretty wild assumptions, in my opinion. One is that their moat is so strong that nobody will be able to create chips that are as good or better or at least passable compared to theirs. That's number one. I thought it was kind of absurd when they passed Microsoft's market cap, because then you think about it, Microsoft is one of the companies that is buying from these guys. Like, you are the products, the end products that are being sent to businesses, that are being sent to consumers. That company that has insane amounts of cash on hand, has consistent profits, consistent revenue growth, isn't worth as much as one of their suppliers. On its face, that seemed a little bit absurd to me.
Yeah.
So in order for this to be continue to be valued where it is relative to the rest of the market, like I said, you're going to have to make the assumption that their moat doesn't get degraded over time. You're going to have to make the assumption that their chips are even necessary. We're in the infancy of what people have dubbed artificial intelligence, or really these large language models. And so one of the core assumptions here is that you actually have to have these complex, massive models, and that they are better and more efficient than smaller, less costly counterparts that with less costly chips. And so all of those things, in my opinion, have to be true in order for this to remain where it is on a relative value basis. And that's just a lot of assumptions. That's a lot of things that have to remain exactly the same. And what we've seen time and time again as industries evolve is that new players come in. When there's a lot of money on the table, people aren't just going to leave it there for one person to take it. And so, especially if the price of these chips continues to be so high, if I'm purchasing them for my company, if I'm Microsoft, I'm working day and night internally to build something that will serve that core function and be able to control costs myself. So, like I said, a lot of assumptions that I think might not hold over time.
Yeah. Especially, it's kind of like what Apple did, right? They bought their own chip company and they built their own chips internally, and now they have their own. They call it not AI. Well, I guess it's still AI, but it's Apple intelligence. I love that, what they did with that. But you know, there's a lot of features that they're going to roll out. Now, there's one thing of note that I think most people are missing with Apple, is that most of these features aren't really rolling out till next year. So it's probably the upgrade cycle will be the following year. But you know, this is things will evolve, and you can see that with insider trading. Insiders are dumping shares at a record amount: 319 million in June, 225 million. In only topping the previous record, 225 million in March. And the previous record before that was December 2021, right before it dropped 60%. And other shareholders within the industry, Michael Dell, dumped $2.1 billion worth. Applied Materials CEO sold $100 million worth recently. So those that are on the inside are dumping their shares. And the 10-for-1 stock split, historically, their stock splits, only half of the four they've ever done in history actually were positive a year out. So those are the parallels, and that's where NVIDIA is likely headed. Now we're heading to break, but give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
This is InvestTalk, with more than 58 million downloads. Justin and Luke are both here now, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, in the next InvestTalk, we'll look into the story behind this headline: EU slaps steep tariffs on Chinese EVs, how it impacts Tesla. So we'll look at that tomorrow, but first we will talk to Curtis. He is in Georgia looking at DTM, which is DT Midstream Inc. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
Yes, I currently own it. I know it's gone up a bit, but I guess they provide a lot of natural gas in the Mid-Atlantic area where the data centers are being growing quite rapidly. So I don't know if it's gone up because of that, but it looks like they do provide a lot of natural gas in that area. So.
Yeah, it does look like that, and it's a recent spinoff back in 2021 from DT Energy, I believe. And it's 4% dividend yield. It adds up pretty dramatically from its February lows around 51. Now it's at $70 and change at the close today. It's good profitability. I don't love the cash flow picture as of late, but I like the story here because I love that despite the ebb and flow of what AI with AI CapEx cycle will be, I do think those chips that are have been bought, they're going to be put to work and they're going to be sucking up a lot of energy, and they are and that's going to increase the demand for energy, and the biggest baseload source in the country is natural gas. And so I like the general story here. Luke, what are you seeing on the profitability and balance sheet front?
Yeah, in terms of profitability, it looks like their margins have been slipping a little bit, down from a peak of 41% back in December of 2020, projected to be around 39%. So not really that much of slippage. Return on equity, return on assets are kind of low. Price to earnings 17 times is a little bit higher than I'd expect for this type of company. It's price to book floating around 1.5 is about industry standard. I don't think it's crazy overly valued from my perspective, but in the past 2 years, there's really just been flat growth, right? Or rather flat revenues, $920 million in 2022, $922 last year, projected to be $981 this year as well. So slight slipping margins, revenue falling off just a little bit. I was reading actually about specifically within this basin, the Haynesville Basin, some of the producers have been shutting off some of their capacity as well, which could be one of the reasons why revenues have been slipping. For me, given the run-up you've had over, you know, year to date, really even the past 3 months, 18%, I just think that it's a little overpriced for me right now. Certainly something I would watch, but it is important to note it does have a consensus hold rating as well from the 12 brokers that cover it.
Yeah, I like the business, but it has moved pretty far, pretty fast. To me, this would be a rebalance here. I would just relook at what percentage of your portfolio it is and maybe get that back in line with what you your original allocation to the name is. Because yes, it is a little expensive. The catch up in to whose valuation will have to be a rise in earnings. The earnings are expected to go to an all-time high of $4.24 next year. But how much of that is already built in? I would say a lot of it. So I would hold on to it. I wouldn't definitely wouldn't sell it all, but this is a good place to trim.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Now let's make it two questions in a row. This came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. My name is Min calling from New Jersey. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I'm interested in getting consistent passive cash incomes from bond investing. So my question today is specifically about CAT bond fund. Symbol is CBYYX, C like a car, B is like a boy, CBYYX. The yield is over 9%. This bond fund is quite new, so not sure if it's safe to invest in it and how much the risk is associated with the high yield. And also specifically, what is CAT bond fund? So how different this is compared to traditional bond fund? I wanted to hear your thoughts on this. Thank you so much. Bye.
So the first I want to start off with saying you need to temper your expectations for income. You know, you're looking for income in the bond market, and what you are doing now is you're chasing yield. You're looking at 10% yield and getting and falling in love with that yield. And know that the market is not going to allow a 10% yield to exist without it being very high risk in this, especially in this environment. Right? Yes, yields have come up and 9% is not as risky as it was maybe four or five years ago, but it's still a high risk situation. And this particular fund has a very high expense ratio, 1.51%. That is extremely high for a bond fund. Now, Luke, why don't you tell her a bit about what is in this bond fund and what makes it risky?
Yes, I think one of the reasons why it's risky, it's 77% notes, 10% debentures, 3% medium-term notes, and then it kind of trickles off from there. There's 121 holdings, but generally speaking, the cat bond, it's catastrophe bonds. So it's reinsurance products and reinsurance-linked products. And so there's kind of some uncertainty around payment streams, payout streams and stuff that kind of makes it why probably it's yielding so much, but you don't get yield for free. So in this instance, the risk of the revenue stream in the individual bonds drying up a little bit and the questions about the longevity and the operational risks of the individual bonds are the reasons why you have to pay investors a higher yield in order to take on these notes. So just like with equities, there is no free lunch here. If you get a higher yielding fund like this, if you get higher yielding bonds like this, it's because you're taking on more risk.
Yeah, that simple. And if you want to take on that catastrophe risk, then you know that if something really bad happens, this fund could be wiped out potentially. And so that's why you are getting that yield. Now, can you buy this as a small sliver of a broader portfolio to create more diversity up the weighted average yield? Sure. I don't have any problem with that. Now, is this the right bond fund? I'm sure there are other catastrophe bond funds out there. I don't know any on the top of my head, but I would probably also compare it between others to see ideally a lower expense ratio. Maybe this is just one of those kind of subcategories that has a high expense ratio, and maybe 1.5% is cheap for this particular category. But this is a very specialized type of bond fund. And once again, you can sprinkle specialized funds into your portfolio, but you don't want that to be the core of what you're doing, because there's specific risks that if they do rear their ugly head, they can really wipe you out. So make sure you go in with your eyes wide open and limit your risk if you're going to go into it. And once again, compare it to its competitors. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends that our InvestTalk audio podcast is also available in video form over on our YouTube channel, where we share our screens and our data, and you get to see our wonderful faces. And so we get questions submitted in the comment section of those YouTube channels, and this is one that came in yesterday. Ahern351 says, Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Austin from Rhode Island. Looking to get your take on Doximity, D-O-C-S. They operate a health tech company that went public back in June of 2021, and as a result, did very well off the pandemic hype, peaking at over $107 per share. They have been heading downward since and are now trading in the high 20 area, despite consistent earnings growth and decent margins. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on starting a position around the $25 mark. Should the negative cash flow be a red flag, or is this attributed to share buybacks? Well, I can answer that. It's not attributed to share buybacks because that's not how the free cash flow number works. It's just a business that I think the top line number, the bottom line number is not as reflective as some of the other metrics in my mind. What are you seeing with docs?
Well, for what it's worth, I'm not saying negative free cash flow. I'm seeing positive free cash flow. So that's one thing. I'm seeing improving free cash flow. Their margins, it look like they're improving as well, which is certainly good. Their sales growth has been pretty explosive early on, but again, new business in the pandemic, a lot of companies that had cloud-based collaboration that would certainly have helped them out as well. They bought back shares in the past year, which is certainly good. There's about 10% short interest out there. From a business perspective, I'm always weary of companies that are newer companies, that are smaller companies. This is a, what, $5 billion name that IPO'd in 2021 that take on cybersecurity risk like this with something that is this sensitive, like patient data. Yeah. You're one hack away from your entire business being destroyed. For me, there's a additional risk premium on here for holding this name. And keeping that in mind, it's trading at 27 times forward-looking PD, about 6 times price to book value. So a little bit expensive, but not crazy relative to some of these tech names. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What are your thoughts? This is a tough one.
Yeah, it's come down a lot. It has nice profitability, 16% return on equity. That's solid. No debt, no long-term debt. That's awesome. We love companies that have strong balance sheets. Like you said, their cash flow is positive, so I'm not sure where the commenter was getting that negative free cash flow number, but that free cash flow has slowed. In fact, it's flat since the fourth quarter of 2022 after growing, dramatically from its IPO mark of $78 million at $172 at the end of 2022. Now it's at $178. So that free cash flow growth has slowed along with its revenue growth. Last quarter, revenue growth was only 6%. 2 years ago, that was in the mid to high 20% range. And so you're paying 12 times sales, like you said, six times book. That's a bit expensive. And if I look at the chart, things are improving a bit, but it's still making a series of lower highs and lower lows. So I would continue to monitor it. I like some things about it. It is a difficult one, like Luke said. But it's not strong enough yet for me to pull the trigger. And so for that reason, I would just keep it on my watch list and monitor it. All right, Luke, and let's talk a little bit about cash. Cash is finally earning something, and Americans are pouring money into cash-like investments. And money market funds hit a record $6.12 trillion earlier this month. And a lot of investors are loving it, right? They're getting their nice 5.25% yield, especially if you're in some sort of treasury like money market account. And that's the highest level in 2 decades. But we talk about this all the time, that while that looks good in recent memory, 5%, well, that's amazing, way more than that 0% we were earning for so long. Historically, that's closer to longer-term averages, and it still underperforms more risky investments like equities and even corporate bonds, for example. So the question for a lot of investors, Luke, is we're heading into likely a rate-cutting cycle, probably will commence in the back half of the year. Now, where rates will bottom is a big question. Are we only going to get maybe 100 basis point rate-cutting cycle? That's certainly possible. But nonetheless, if the Fed cuts rates, the rate on the cash will go down. And despite that nice five plus percent yield that a lot of investors have been enjoying for the past couple of years, equities have certainly outperformed it since the end of 2021. And that's going into a big downdraft at 2022. So, how should investors, do you think, should they think about their cash-like holdings?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to note is something that you said before, which is that time in the market is better than time in the market.
Yeah.
I think that this may be skewed a little bit in terms of looking at an aggregate of how investors are holding their assets, right? Where you have a generally a population that is on average older than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Assets are concentrated more than they have ever been in higher age groups. If you think about older people, they tend to be more loss averse, right? Because they're going to be spending down those retirements. They're going to be spending down those savings. And so when you get a free 5-6% yield, maybe you're not even going to put it in the equity market for 10, 15 years anymore. Maybe you want to tilt more towards those revenue streams and more towards the preservation of capital. It makes sense to me that when you do see those 5-6% cash yields, you are going to just jump on it. That being said, I think that for people who have longer investment time horizons, you certainly are missing out, right? Because equities have been historically the best hedge against inflation. Why? Well, it's just an economic sensibility story there. If prices are higher, who are getting those prices, right? Who is getting those revenues? Companies. Companies are passing those back on to shareholders. That's why equities have historically been a better hedge against inflation. So I think, again, it depends on what your investment goals are, but it also depends on what your investment horizon is. So you're older, it makes sense to get that free yield. You're younger, certainly equities is the best place for you to be.
Yeah, and that last point I think is the most important, which is that equities are the best hedge against inflation. Typically, cash-like instruments, fixed income of some type, that tends to be a better hedge against deflation. And I don't know about y'all, but I see more inflation in today's economy than I ever have really in my lifetime. And so, you know, that's what you have to protect from most in this environment is actually the upside, right? The upside of inflation. And you need a hedge against that, and cash certainly won't help with that. And then there's the tax side, right? Money market funds are generally taxed at ordinary income. Even if you're buying treasuries, that's still taxed at your federal income tax rate. You might be state tax exempt, but the federal tax rate still applies. Whereas dividends or long-term capital gains, that's taxed at a more advantageous rate. So be aware of that as well, and know that it can be fine for small buckets, short-term cash needs to be in money markets within, say, 2 years. I think that's perfectly fine. But you start going out, you're likely to see outperformance in equities. Well, we are headed to our final break, but we're ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Ernesto, and I'm calling from Corcoran, California. And I just want to give a shout out to you guys on all that you do. And I'm calling about a stock, NUE, Nucor. I believe it's a steel company. I'm just wondering if you like it at these levels. I know it's in downtrend, but like it's super cheap. Do you see any revenue or earnings estimates for the next 3 years, if it's growing at all? Thank you for all that you do. I'll be looking forward to your answer on the next podcast. Thank you.
All right, looking at Nucor, this is very similar to the Cleveland Cliffs call that we had earlier in the show. And this is one of those names that I was kind of hinting at. There are two solid names in the steel industry. Nucor is one of them, and there is a competitor. If you go look at profitability within the industry, you'll find one other that has similar qualities to it, shall we say. So this is much better than Cleveland Cliffs, but it's a steel industry, and that is in a downturn. And just like Cleveland Cliffs being down big over the past few months, Nucor is also. Even though it's the best in the industry, or one of the best, shall we say, it's still not immune to the ebbs and flows of the cyclicality of the industry itself. This peaked at around $203 per share. Now we're at $151, down 25%. And that peak was just a couple months ago, early April. So, you know, I don't love the technical picture. What are you seeing on the profitability front, Luke?
Yeah, from a profitability perspective, cash flow has fallen over the past year and a half. It's slowed down. Their net margins have fallen as well. In terms of debt levels, I mean, they have no net debt because they have $7.1 billion in cash and only $6.9 billion in debt. So they're not overly levered. Short interest looks fine. They've been buying back shares over the past couple of years. They've been paying a consistent dividend that might actually be increasing year over year. Yeah, for at least the past 5 years, they've consistently increased their dividend year over year. But I think this goes back to, you know, I say all the time that it's not just about finding good businesses. It's about finding good businesses at good prices. It's also about understanding that the economy and businesses are cyclical. And just because you have a good business doesn't mean it's the right time to buy, even if it looks like it's relatively cheap relative to its fundamentals, just because, like you said, this industry is in a downtrend. And you see it within the technical setup here. I don't see anything that shows that it's going to break its down momentum anytime soon. It doesn't change that it's a good business. It just means that it's not the right time to buy this good business.
Yeah, and earnings estimates continue to go lower for both this year and next year. And that's why I would keep on my watch list. You know, if you're ever going to buy a steel producer and they start to, the sector as a whole starts to turn, this is one of the first places you want to look. But right now, it just recently turned. It was a bit in a big uptrend, pretty much from the bottom of COVID, where it bottomed around $27 and it hit over 200 recently. Now it's at 151. I will say the next major support level is at 136, it's at 151 now, but I probably wouldn't touch this until it's sub 100, around $95 per share. So I'm passing on Nucor, but it's on the watch list. Now, Luke, let's talk a little bit about convertible bonds and one of our favorite pandemic stocks, Peloton. And in 2021, they issued a convertible bond that had zero yield. They didn't have to pay any interest on it. It was just all about basically selling call options on the underlying stock at a very, very high price. It was $239 per share was when it would go in the money. Now, Peloton trading at $3, just slightly out of the money right now.
Just a little bit.
And they just recently issued more. So what is this?
Why not?
If that's the best way they could access cheap capital still. It shows you there's still demand for convertible bonds. But how do you think about convertible bonds in the context of, you know, equity investing as well as being a bondholder?
I think that they have their purposes for companies that need to raise a lot of capital and want to do so without having immediate strains on their balance sheet. I think they also tend to be abused by companies that don't have real business models, like one that's only benefit to consumers is slapping an iPad on an exercise bike.
Yeah.
So I think anytime you see a situation where companies are issuing these bonds, you need to dig a little bit deeper and ask yourself why.
Yeah, it's not an automatic I would invest in this company, but it's definitely a bit of a red flag. And like you said, you have to know why. They better have a good reason besides, oh, it was just cheap. Because remember, they are also capping your upside to a degree, because the price does appreciate, that turns into equity issuance and you being diluted. So be very wary of companies that issue too many convertible bonds. Well, that about does it. That completes another episode of Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.